Have you ever just thrown your hands up and said, I don't get it? Your child is bright, maybe even gifted, but they're not doing their work. They're disorganized. They're resistant. It feels like they won't. But what if they can't? Today, we're going to explore executive function with executive function ADHD and 2E coach, Seth Perler. You'll get insights about your out-of-the-box, underachieving students and some practical tools for building executive function. This is LD Expert Live. Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning disabilities, dyslexia, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. To get a free copy, go to parentsatwitsend.com. This is LD Expert Live. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, and our guest today is Seth Perler. Seth is a well-known executive function coach, educator, vlogger, and a guy who cares about seeing outside-the-box kids succeed. He helps struggling neurodiverse learners turn it around so they can function in a baffling education system and launch a successful future. His weekly blog, SethPerler.com, gives parents and teachers game-changing answers to help their students navigate school and life. Welcome, Seth.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to see you.
It's so great to have you. You have some incredible online resources for parents and teachers and students. Talk a little bit about your mission and why you're so passionate about executive function.
Okay. Well, first of all, Jill, I just want to say thank you to you for what you do and how you show up in the world. Jill and I got to know each other recently. And I just always appreciate meeting a kindred spirit and just somebody whose life is really dedicated to serving kids. So I just want to thank you for how you show up. Your show is so super cool. I'm so impressed and I just love it. And I'm like going, how can I do this? This is you provide an amazing service to families. So thanks so much for how you show up.
Well, thanks, Seth.
So now what was the question? Why do I care so much about this topic?
Kind of your story behind becoming an executive function coach.
Yeah. So I was that student. So I was the student that I help right now. So there's the wounded healer syndrome. You know, I was somebody who struggled. Literally, my report cards or progress reports starting in first grade started saying messages like, doesn't try, needs to work harder, lazy, unmotivated, daydreams. Daydream was a big one for me. Does not pay attention, things like this. And so that's first grade. So obviously it got worse from there. But what ended up happening to me was that once I did get somewhere around middle school, and this is the pattern that I really see with a lot of my students, I started getting very disillusioned and disheartened and really more and more resistant. And different kids deal with this differently. But in my case, what I did is I just sort of faked it enough to get my parents off my back. That was my strategy. I just did the bare minimum to try to keep them off my back and stay off the radar. I really felt like I didn't know how to do what I was being asked to do. And then I would hear messages like, well, we know you can do it. We've seen you do it before. And I was like, yeah, but I don't know how to explain to you that I can't do it for whatever reason right now or what, you know, I just didn't have the words for that. So anyhow, I was that student. I almost failed out of high school. I went to college on probation because my grades were low, but my test scores were high. I failed out of that college, Ball State University. I went straight into another college because I thought you were supposed to be in college. So I got into a community college in Columbus, Ohio. I dropped out of that one before I failed out. And essentially, I became a person who I really didn't believe that I could accomplish anything in life. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I didn't have really a lot of choices or possibilities, and I really played the victim. It's everybody else's fault, the society's fault, teacher's fault, blah, blah, parents' fault, everybody else's fault but mine, and really just was pretty stuck. And finally, I really wanted to turn my life around. I really knew that I was very limited and unhappy. And I did. And I worked harder than I ever worked in my life. And somehow I got this random job working with kids, fell in love with it. One day, driving on Spring Mill Road in Indianapolis, Indiana, turning this curve after leaving work, working with kids, I was like smiling. I had this smile plastered on my face. And in that moment, I was like, this makes me happy. I want to serve kids for the rest of my life. So that was the defining moment for me. And then I became a teacher, got a master's in gifted and talented, taught all sorts of different ages, grades, subjects. And really, to sort of wrap it up, just became disillusioned then with the system, and very frustrated that I felt that I couldn't do the job that I had signed up for, or that I couldn't do it to, you know, I feel like life is short and precious. You know, we have 100 years here on earth maybe. And I really wanted to do my work, and I felt like I couldn't do that in that setting. So I left teaching in 2010 and started what I'm doing now. And I'm just, I love it because I can really authentically focus on these kids who often fall through the cracks, who are often, as you stated earlier, the can't versus the won't, which we might get into today, but mm-hmm. who really are at risk, and their quality of life oftentimes suffers because they don't have the executive function skills to navigate life very well. Therefore, they can't accomplish goals that matter to them once they start to matter. So my driving question is, how do we take these at-risk kids, whether they have an identification or not, doesn't matter. How do we take these kids who appear to be, quote, failing in the way that we evaluate them? And how do we help them have an experience where they can really learn how to get things done, but not just compliant, like really, so that we won't get into that discussion right now, but how can they get things done so that they can have choices and possibilities and opportunities in their future to really create a future that they want, not so that they just sort of settle for a job they get and yada, 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 but so that they can really intentionally craft a good future for themselves.
Well, I think your story and your mission have got to be really resonating with so many parents out there. It's so frustrating for kids and parents to look at, you know, these kids with all this potential and they just can't get it together and don't know why. Let's do a little executive function 101. Mm-hmm. Just what is executive function?
So I always say that if you Google executive function right now, you're going to find 10 or 20 definitions that are very clinical. And the problem with that is that most parents and teachers have never even heard of executive function. The ones that have know a little bit about it, but it still seems like such an inaccessible concept. It's not. Mm-hmm. All executive function is it means how we get stuff done. That's it. How we get stuff done. Now, I'll break it down for you a little bit more, but it's not this giant concept that's so inaccessible. How we get stuff done. So how do we get stuff done? How do we get complex tasks done? What types of things do we get done? Well, the things that we're concerned about in this interview here, the things we're concerned about with our kids is how do they get their schoolwork done and their responsibilities done? Usually it's in those two broad, very broad categories. That's the problem. We're not worried about how they get their video games done and how they get their screen time done and how they get their sports or their interests or their hobbies or their art or their music or their social time done. Those things they don't have trouble with execution on. So that can be kind of baffling for parents, but we're concerned with how do we get those things done? Well, how do we get those two things done, responsibilities and schoolwork? Well, the front part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex of our brain, the front third or so of our brain is the part that generally helps us to get these things done. So in order to get something done, let's take a very concrete example of writing an essay for a fifth grade class. In order to get that essay done, you have to be detail oriented enough to pick up on the instructions. You have to inhibit distractions and focus on the details. So you have to pay attention, concentrate, focus on reading the instructions or listening to the instructions from the teacher about the essay or reading through the rubric or whatever it is. You have to plan when to do that. You have to activate, you have to self-start. So basically procrastination, or somebody who's unmotivated, they are somebody who is struggling to self-start, to get started on that thing. And then task persistence means follow through, and task completions means that they finished it and turned it in with their name on it. So executive function, you'll hear experts say there are 3 aspects, or there are 5 aspects, or there are 8 aspects. I talk about like maybe 20 aspects. So you have impulsivity, inhibition, attention, concentration, focus. You have planning, time management, organization, organizing your thoughts, organizing the things that you write, organizing your space or your school materials. So essentially, executive function has to do with anything that the brain needs to do in order to get these important things done. Now, were you going to ask something? Because I was going to talk about one very, very, very important
thing. Go for it.
Very, 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 very important thing about getting things done is that these kids often have tutors or pull-out programs or punishments or rewards or any number of things to try to help them to execute more effectively. There are many ways that we try to get them to do these things. But if we do not address one particular thing, we're missing a massive, massive, massive part of the whole battle here. And that is that we have to address with these kids their own resistance. So these kids are resistant often to parents, especially once they get into middle and high school, parents helping, teachers helping, especially in middle school, looking different from anybody else in the class. They don't want any attention. They don't want to ask the teacher for help. And they're resistant to starting, meaning starting their homework. That's called procrastination, right? They're resistant to using planners or calendars in an effective and meaningful way. They're resistant to organizing their folders or their papers or their binders. There's this resistance that comes up to all sorts of things. If we don't teach them what that resistance is and how to navigate it and how to work with it, and that it doesn't have to rule us, and that we have tools to understand the resistance and to have a relationship with our own resistance to doing things. If we don't empower them to work with that, then all we're doing is trying to use external measures to, quote, motivate them or pressure them into doing what we think they should, what we value thinking that they should do at the time. So any program or person or intervention that fails to address this resistance thing, to me, is missing a massive, massive, massive opportunity to really serve these kids.
Mm-hmm. And really to help them understand what that resistance is all about. And, you know, resistance is so tough for parents and teachers because it ends up looking like defiance or a motivation problem. And so, you know, then we get that big reaction to that from the adult.
Yeah. These kids are very misunderstood, and that does lead into the can't versus the won't really nicely.
Mm-hmm. And I know you talk a lot about the issue of shame, and I really want you to talk about that because as adults, we do that to our kids, and we you know, sort of inadvertently maybe, but it can really hurt them.
Yeah, nobody intends to shame anyone, or maybe some people do, but that's not the people that are here. And most people, most parents and teachers, they don't intend to do that. But we mm-hmm. have been raised in our cultures and subcultures and societies and family systems that have sent messages to us when we were young people and throughout our lives that shame is a good way to get things done. And what that means is that we see our child, whether it's a parent or a teacher or principal or whoever, who needs to get something done, who needs to execute on something, we see them not doing it. So we either directly or indirectly send these shaming messages. And these shaming messages usually are, I kind of mentioned, alluded to this before, but something to the effect of, you're being lazy. Mm-hmm. You're not trying hard enough. You need to try harder. You need to pull yourself by your bootstraps. Why don't you care about school? If you just cared about school a little bit more, everything would be okay. These sorts of messages, they're designed to use logic and reason with the child to somehow say, stop being lazy, motivate yourself, get motivated. You need to be more disciplined. So we're using logic. If you just did this thing, then you would get these things done. Your life would be so much easier. Don't you just understand why you're making this so hard on yourself? It'll only take you 10 minutes, blah, blah, blah. Like all of these messages, what they're communicating to that, these are communicating this shame thing. What is this shame thing? Well, that means that the person receiving the message, again, whether it's direct or indirect, because we can do this in very, 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 very subtle ways. And kids pick up on this stuff so quickly. Mm-hmm. They hear contempt, like it's screaming, even if it's a whisper. They feel it. It pierces them deeply. These are very sensitive human beings, and they don't know how to articulate it. They're just having an experience that, I have this pressure from this person or these people to do this thing, and I don't even know where to start. I don't even care about this thing. This is not an interest of mine. The way it's presented is not interesting, whatever the case may be, you know. They're not able to do what they're being asked. Now, you might think, well, I've seen them do it before.
Right.
Well, maybe they can cognitively handle the task, but they can't handle the vast executive skills that are necessary to regulate the emotion to get started on the task, to change their mindset, which was, oh, I can't do this, this is too big, to be like, oh, well, I can chunk it down and I have strategies, blah, 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 to get started. So there's all of these things that they can't do or haven't really integrated these skills yet. So they can't do it. So these kids, we use these messages to shame them. In hopes that they'll get the thing done. And sometimes it works, which can be very misleading, but oftentimes, like I was talking about my experience, it's just because I wanted them off my back, not because I was internally motivated or turned over a new leaf or something. Even if I told my parents, yeah, I'm different, this semester's different, oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, oh, I'm so organized, spend the first 2 weeks like getting all A's, everything looks great, blah, 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 and then it falls apart. So this shame really pierces. Now, here's the problem. The problem is when we internalize that shame. And what that means is when I start to think, I'm a worthless piece of crap. I can't do anything right. I'm a lazy failure. I hate mm-hmm. myself. Why do I always mess everything up? Why do I always screw up? I can't. You know, and we start to internalize, I'm bad. I'm wrong. I'm broken. I'm not okay. I'm not enough. I'm not good. I'm not worthy. We internalize that. Now, again, we may not be using those words, but we have this inner critic. We all have an inner critic. But what happens is that sometimes our inner critic, especially for kids who've experienced a lot of the shame, can be so loud and mm-hmm. so they can be so hard on themselves that it really, A, does the opposite of what we want to do, which means that they become less motivated to actually take emotional risks to do the things we're asking them to do, because they know no matter how hard they try, they're always going to be told in some way it's not good enough. You need to do the test corrections, or you need to rewrite it, or you need to finish it and resubmit it, or, you know, it just gets very daunting for them. But that, when they start to internalize that and then become adults who have really internalized that, it really leads to oftentimes years of, and I'm sure many of the people watching, go ahead and put in the comments if this is you, but it often takes years for us to sort of sift through who we are and be like, I'm a good person. I'm okay. That message, you know, I internalized that years ago. And like, we might have a moment where we think, oh my gosh, I remember in fourth grade when this happened and I got that message, and now I'm responding to, you know, a colleague with this, and I'm connecting it to that. Oh my gosh, this stuff runs deep. You know, sometimes we have those experiences where we really realize how much we've been influenced by things like this. But
right, you know, our brain does listen to our inner talk. And so if we keep giving ourselves that message, you know, we kind of then become that. And I've had kids say, oh, well, I'm just lazy. You know, they now call themselves things. And I think you said something really important, that there are so many skills involved, and we see them do something one time, or we see that they can do part of it and think, well, then they're choosing not to do it every time. But there are so many pieces that have to be in place for them mm-hmm. to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So.
And we don't teach it directly. And that's why I do what I do. You know, it's sort of a mystery that in what you said, they choose. Choose implies it's a won't. So mm-hmm. we talk about the can't and the won't. If they just are choosing to be defiant or to not try or whatever, then that is that they won't. Right. And now once they get more in the middle and high school and they're more jaded, it often becomes more of a won't. Mm-hmm. You know, but it initially, they still can't at that point, but it's a can't and a won't. But when they're younger, it's really a can't. And mm-hmm. can you imagine being told, you know, let's say you can't, I'm learning to kite surf right now. I can't do, I'm not, I just finished my lessons. I can barely do it. I cannot do, if you said try harder, I'm going to injure myself. If you said mm-hmm. play the trumpet, I can play guitar because I've been doing it for 25 years. I can't play the trumpet today. I do, you know, but we say that to these kids thinking that they just, it's a won't. Right. So what I do is I say, I'm definitely a nerd, and I definitely nerd out on this stuff, but I say, how do we take this person who's resistant and has had all these experiences and doesn't have the skills and can't, and how do we get them from that point to the point where they can? And it's what I call good enough executive function, because it's certainly not perfect. And it's certainly not as good as anybody who has naturally linear thinking, somebody with naturally strong executive function. Like, that's a strength of theirs. So, like, we're not looking for that. We're looking for, how do they have good enough executive function that, and this is how I frame it, that the parent can breathe a sigh of relief and go, this kid's gonna be okay. It's not perfect, but they're gonna be okay. They can figure out life, that they're gonna be able to accomplish their goals. Yeah. How do we get to that point is what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. And I think some of that is, you know, really discovering what are the skills or what are the factors underneath that problem. I know we always look at things that way when we look at learning and attention. Well, if you've got a bright child who is really struggling to learn to read or do math, well, let's look underneath the academics and find out what skills under there are not supporting them well enough. And I think, you know, executive function, there are just so many pieces to the puzzle, can be like that too. And I know you've talked about that kind of as that piece that we see that we think is laziness or lack of caring or motivation. That behavior is really just the tip of the iceberg. So what's going on that we don't always see with these kids?
Yeah, well, that sort of brings up two things. One is this iceberg theory, which I think maybe I'll come back to. But the other is on that journey from, so like I was saying before about that, I'm a nerd about this stuff. What I mean by that is I have obsessively thought about this stuff for years and tried to really come up with a model that makes sense that I can communicate to other people. So here's sort of how the model works. You've got a student at point A, you want to get them to point B. Now, not only, I have to say this, not only are we dealing with the student, their executive function skills, and the resistance, we're also dealing with the iceberg theory, what's going on underneath the tip of the iceberg. Is there past trauma that hasn't been integrated? And I'm not talking about just a traumatic event. Trauma is very complex, but trauma that has sort of been low level ongoing, there can be many types, but is there past trauma that hasn't been dealt with? Is there a dyscalculia, a math disability? Like what kinds of things have not even been identified that are below the tip? But so we have those things with the person, but we also at point A have to contend with the, let's use the word programming of the parents, teachers, society, culture, the school. Mm-hmm. We have been, quote, programmed. And what I mean by that, I'm not getting woo-woo and I'm not getting conspiracy theory with you here. What I am saying is that we have grown up with messaging that implies certain things. You might have grown up with, you have to go to college. And that's the path for everyone. And getting all A's is important. And, you know, so we have to sift through at this point A, like not only how do we help the kid, but also what misinformation are we using that's been driving our choices and words and thoughts mm-hmm. and behaviors and trying to intervene and help this child? Because we need to be real honest with ourselves if we want to help this kid about what's really important. You know, we default to, well, we've heard these messages so much throughout our life, you know, that they're true. Well, I've been doing this a long time. Jill's been doing this a long time. I mean, we have, again, probably both obsessed so much on, wow, this doesn't work for kids. That doesn't work for kids. Now, a lot of things work for kids. A lot of teachers are great for kids, but there is a lot of misinformation and old patterning that needs to change. So anyhow, we need to sift through that at point A. We're trying to get to point B. What do the kids need to get from point A to B? The way that I teach it in my model is three things. Your kids need three things. If you're going to get them to point A, from point A to point B, where you're going, okay, this kid's going to be okay. They got good enough executive function. What do they need? Three things. Systems, mindsets, habits, and routines. What does that mean? Systems. So this is where there could be a curriculum in schools to teach executive function stuff, but there's not. So kids who sort of pick up on it over the years, they see, it seems like they're trying harder. They're not. They've actually been working at taking suggestions from teachers and parents for years, and they've created systems. What kind of systems? I'll give you a couple of systems. One system is how to use a planner or calendar or agenda. Another system is how to make a daily plan and think through what you have to do each day or each evening when you get home from school. Another system is how to organize your folders, binders, or accordion folders, or papers, or stuff like that. Another system is how do you organize your backpack or your locker or your desk. So you might not think of a backpack as a system, but that is a system of organization. Now, if you have a child who just mashes everything into the abyss of the backpack and the teacher says, get a pencil out, and they just reach in there and grab one and they find broken pencils in every pocket. And, you know, well, that's a system, but they do not know how to intentionally, mindfully, consciously use that system in a really effective way. It's good enough to get you off their back, but it's really not a good system. But anyhow, so those are some systems. So the good news is there's not an infinite number of systems. This isn't some abstract concept. The kids need a certain amount of basic systems in order to navigate school. Maybe 10 or so that I teach. Mindsets. Well, let's start with the resistance mindset. The mindset we don't want is we don't want the resistance mindset to rule us. Okay. So if we're just resistant to something, we want to if we're just resistant to it, then we let it boss us around. We all have resistance. Every single one of you watching, you know, you think about a chore that you hate. Like you might, like, I like doing windows, I hate doing floors. True story. You know, like we all have mindsets about certain things, but that's a resistance mindset. I don't feel like doing that. That's not a type of thing I like. Paying my taxes. I don't mind paying the taxes. I mind doing the taxes. That is just makes my head spin. It's not my strength area. So anyhow, we have resistance mindsets that say, I don't want to do this. This is not fun. I'm not good at it. So these are mindsets that keep us out of execution. What we need with mindsets is mindsets like Carol Dweck. She did research and wrote a book called Mindset, but she talks about growth mindset. But essentially, mindsets that we want are mindsets that we can execute. Okay, this is daunting. I have a big mountain. I have a lot of makeup work to do, whatever. This isn't a fun class, but I need to get this work done. I can do it. Let's go ahead and get started. I can get rid of my distractions. We want to have a can-do mindset rather than a resistance mindset. So we have a mindset of that keeps us from execution, and we have a mindset that empowers us to execute. Systems, mindsets. Do you remember the third one I mentioned? The third one I mentioned is habits and routines. If we have systems, great. If we have mindsets that help us move through the resistance, great. But if we don't have habits and routines to continue to maintain and refine those systems and to refine and improve upon our mindsets, doesn't do us any good. So if I, again, I love guitars, but if I know how to play some guitar and I don't have a routine for practice or good habits for strumming or picking or arpeggios or whatever, then I'm going to be a sloppy player. I'm not going to be able to accomplish my goals within that area. But with school, we need the systems, the mindsets, because if your kid is just told, I'll give you $100 if you get straight A's, but that's the reward. You'll be punished and lose privileges if you don't do this. I'm going to lecture you, nag you, bug you, logic you, use reason, help you see the light. You know, if we're going to this stuff, again, that's not changing their mindset. So they need these systems. They need real mindsets and they need real habits and routines. So to get from that point A to point B, those are the three basic things that I'm helping people do. So I'm helping them build those things. Now, here's the problem, parents and teachers. Even though I try to make it as linear as possible, this is not super linear. Okay, I can outline all the stuff. People want to know, well, where do I start, Seth? Do I start with the systems, mindsets, habits, and routines? Which system do I start with? Which mindset do I start? This is not linear. People are looking for I have a roadmap and I teach a roadmap, but that's very misleading. The roadmap shows the components of how this stuff works, but this is abstract. There's a lot of abstraction. There's a lot of nuance that I can't just say, here's the recipe. These are complex human beings we're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. Not just, do the recipe and my kid will change. That is not it. So what's the key here then? What's the key here? Well, some of the abstractions, I'll mention two abstractions that we deal with, and then I really want to hear some questions and anything from you, Jill. But two things that we really want to deal with. One is relationships and one is emotional regulation. So relationships, if these kids don't feel, just as any of you watching, all of you watching right now can think of somebody you wouldn't tell certain things to. You wouldn't tell your secrets. You wouldn't tell things that are very personal to you. Why wouldn't you tell them? Well, you might not know them. You might not trust them. If you don't know them, certainly you don't trust them. So would you go and just tell a stranger just a bunch of things about yourself and your family and your personal thoughts? And, we need to feel safe. And our kids need to feel what's called secure attachment. If you want to research something called attachment theory, that's one of the most important things I can ever recommend to you. Your kids want to feel like they can come to you, they can be who they are, and that you will see them, you will hear them, they will feel heard by you. They will feel seen. They will feel understood. They'll feel like you've got their back. Now, you know you've got their back, but they don't necessarily feel. Listen very closely to this. You know, and I think a lot of people get confused on this. You know you've got their back. You know you are trying to listen. You know you try to help. You know you have their best interest in mind, but they don't necessarily feel heard, seen, understood by you. So that relationship piece, I cannot get a resistant teenager to listen to the Seth idiot guy that they don't even know unless I build a safe and secure relationship where they know I will see them and help them be understood. I cannot do my work until I first start to build that relationship. And then I must maintain that. They always, you know, a parent can be freaking out. My kid still has all F's. What's going on? I cannot help the kid turn that around if I go all anxious on the kid and be like, why didn't you turn it? You know, the relationship, they have to know they're safe. That's the only way we move forward. This is a very slow process. People want a quick fix. That's the world we live in. That's not reality. These are complex human beings. Two, emotional regulation. Resistance is a physical experience. Think about a food you hate. And now imagine yourself eating that food. Some of you watching right now are making a face right now. Oh, I can't even imagine eating that. That's resistance, even with food, okay? But you are having a physical experience based on your thought about a thing. And they're having a physical experience. They have to learn to regulate emotion, regulate feelings, know what's going on. We don't teach what's going on in the body. Any of you watching who know what's going on in the body is because maybe you do yoga or meditate or read books about it or learn about somatic therapies or things like, but many of us don't really know how the body is communicating messages to us. Okay. So we want to teach them how to regulate. This is a very surfacey explanation, Jill. Mm-hmm. It's something we could spend hours on, but just real briefly, they need to understand how to regulate emotion too. So what I was just to circle back to the beginning, this is not a linear process. Seth, give me a recipe. Help me figure out what's going on with my kid. Let's get from that point A to point B and let's do it right now this semester and we'll be great for the fall. Mm-mm. We got a long, messy, nonlinear journey. We can know the pieces of the puzzle, but it's very different from family to family. Emotional regulation is going to look different. Relationship is going to look different from family to family. So there's all kinds of nuance all around that.
You know, I love the things you were talking about with kids need systems, mindset and habits and routines. And, you know, when we work with our kids on executive function, it's like, oh, and there's this and this and this and this that we need to work on. You know, as you said, it's like, where do we start? Well, you start with one thing and then really work with that mindset and systems and routines around that. And we're so, you know, impatient to get everything solved, but.
And it doesn't matter what one thing, if right. They come to you or I, and it's, let's say towards the end of the semester and they're failing all of our classes, you and I are going into triage mode and we're looking at the urgent stuff. And we see that they have, you know, a 500 point paper that's bringing their grade down. We're going to start with that and use the things around that to drive what we're teaching as we're doing that thing. And you and I aren't sitting there saying, are we doing this skill and this? I mean, some of it is conscious, but like these things are so interrelated,
right?
That, you know, you're really impacting a lot of things by helping with one thing. I don't know if that makes any
right.
sense.
Seth, thank you so much for all your insights that you shared with viewers today. Man, this was packed. It's going to be something we're going to need to go back and replay and listen to several times. Great stuff. Stowell Learning Centers are open for remote screenings and sessions, so you can access our services wherever you are in the world. We're also seeing students on site with all the COVID precautions. At Stoa Learning Centers, we help children and adults permanently resolve their learning and attention challenges. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stoalcenter.com. Thank you again, Seth, for such valuable information.